everybody. This is Dean Treadway with Movie Geeks United. Welcome to the show and our special spotlight on the independent film scene. This past spring, the Atlanta Film Festival featured one of the best independent films of 2014. It's called The Foxy Merkins, and it follows Lisa Haas as Margaret, a newcomer to the odd and actually non-existent world of lesbian prostitution, who, in a nod to Midnight Cowboy and the male hustler films of the 1970s, begins taking streetwalking tips from a more cagey professional, played with great wit by Jackie Monahan. The movie's constantly whimsical, even at times sort of John Waters-like in its outrageousness. The Foxy Merkins also displays a great deal of heart, especially when it comes to the performances of its two leads. Shot on the mean streets of New York City by director Madeline Olmick, who really uses the city superbly. It's a wonderful sort of tour through New York and Brooklyn and so forth. Olmick co-wrote the script with Lisa Haas and Jackie Monahan, the two stars. And the Foxy Merkins has been making the festival rounds all year long. It started out at Toronto in 2013, and it's moved all across the country. And it's all of this travel is culminating with its selection by the Independent Film Project as one of five new indie films to be given a theatrical release in New York City. It will play at the Made in New York Media Center in Dumbo in Brooklyn from December 5th to the 11th. And so on the eve of this theatrical run, we talked to Madeline Olmick, the director and co-writer, and Lisa Haas, the star and co-writer, about the making of this truly hysterical comedy. So here's the conversation that we had.
Foxy Merkins? Foxy Merkins? Love Fuzz? Foxy Merkins?
Oh, He's a Merkin salesman.
So Foxy Merkins?
What's a Merkin?
It's a toupee for your vagina.
What kind of cut you like?
I like a little smaller.
Small? Petite? Mm-hmm. Petite vagina?
Yeah.
You want one of those?
You should get
petite
one.
Petite Ambers?
I have a plus-size vagina.
I want to start off by talking about the writing process for the Foxy Merkins. And do you? I know that you guys co-wrote it with the other lead in the movie, Jackie Monahan. Do you remember the moment where the person that came up with, "Hey, what if we do a lesbian prostitution comedy?" You know, what was that moment like?
That was a dream of mine for years to be. For a good, I don't even know how many years, but I thought it would be a really funny idea. And basically, I had made my first feature starring Lisa, and mm-hmm. Jackie was also in it. And when it premiered at Sundance. We were so excited. And when we went there, we all shared this house. And Lisa and Jackie actually had only been in one short scene in a spaceship in that movie. And they didn't really know each other. But when we were at Sundance, it became clear that they had a really great chemistry in terms of, like, playing off of each other.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I thought, I remembered this idea that I had always wanted to make this movie. That was a, you know, lesbian hooker movie that sort of pairs on that buddy formula of one person kind of being the pimp and the other person
right.
the prostitute we've seen in, you know, Midnight Cowboy and My Own Private Idaho and so many movies. And so I thought, oh, this would be perfect. So that was where the idea came from. And also, So I'll try not to talk too long. That's a problem.
Well, the previous movie, Lisa, what was the previous movie called that you did with Madeline? Because I always forget the title.
Sure. It's Codependent Lesbian Space Alien Seeks.
And so with the Foxy Merkins, with what was the writing process like? Madeline, did you just let the leads just kind of, improvise the dialogue, or what was that process like? You know.
Well, it was a long and tortured process. Mm-hmm. We really suffered for our art, and it went on for years. It did, and basically we used. There's this crazy writing technique I use called automatic writing. It was invented by the surrealists in the 30s in Europe. And so it's this kind of writing where you do it for timed sessions, and the rule of it is you can't stop your pen from moving. Sort of slow down and think something through and decide what's going to happen. You have to really...
Press forward, always.
Yeah. Even sort of maybe being a little out of control or being ahead of you, even. So I had us all incorporate that process. I mean, it was the same process I used to write Codependent, Lesbian, Space, Alien, Seek, Same on my own, but...
Do you find that that process sort of leads you to wackier, you know,
sure,
if you have comedy in mind,
definitely,
at least, stranger places that maybe sitting there and considering every move, you know, probably you put some sort of self-censorship in there, so I can see where that would lead.
Yeah, oh, for sure. Like, it definitely, the idea really of all art and motion pictures is you are trying to tap into unconscious imagery. Like, that's what makes art resonate. And mm-hmm. and you're trying to reach things that maybe are suppressed in your unconscious. So this writing mm-hmm. technique is supposed to tap into that.
Mm-hmm.
So it was sort of a, just to answer your question, and I did warn you, I talked for a long time.
Oh, that's okay.
But it was a process where we actually wrote, and then we'd shoot a little, and then we'd rewrite, and then shoot some more. And there was sort of like a seamless process of improvisation in the writing, and then improvisation on set, and then what we did on set feeding our next round of writing. So that's how we worked, and it really was a long, painstaking process to put this together.
Was there a lot of stuff that you cut out of it? I mean, you probably...
like a whole nother movie and a half. There could be 2.5 Foxy Merkins movies. And
well, good. You already have the sequel, though. You don't want a sequel to it.
Exactly.
It's perfect the way it is.
In fact, some people were disappointed when they felt like scenes that were their favorites were cut out. But
we couldn't
have a 3-hour movie, you know? It was just...
I know that lesbian prostitution doesn't really exist. You clued me in on to that, I never thought about it, but I was like, yeah, it does seem absurd. But did you do any kind of research into the life of a streetwalker, so to speak, for the film?
Well, actually, before we made this movie years ago, I was involved in a couple of other theater projects, and in one of them, like, I went with somebody and we interviewed strippers, female strippers at strip clubs, and we would go and watch them and then talk to them afterwards. And I have several friends, anonymous, of course, who are sex workers. And so I've gotten their stories over the years of things that have happened. And so in terms of preparing for this, you know, one of the things we all did was rewatch all those movies like Midnight Cowboy and Cruising and My Own Private Idaho.
That you mentioned Cruising. That's funny.
Actually, one version of the movie started with a warning. We took the warning that they opened Cruising with and put it at the head of our movie as it. But some people took it seriously. We were like, this is just a small segment of the homosexual community. Well, small segment. So it totally didn't work
because
no one got the reference. So
that's funny. Well, people who listen to this show might get will definitely find that entertaining, because we talk about Cruising on our show quite a lot because we're huge Al Pacino fans. So we talk mm-hmm. about that a lot. But that's hilarious.
We were in a sense more interested in how prostitution has been depicted in the movies than we were in the sense of, like, researching, like, real live prostitutes, especially because we were, you know, basically creating and conveying a world that doesn't exist. I mean, we also looked at, I had looked at John Rishi's books and, you know, who wrote City of Night and wrote about being a male prostitute and the whole idea that's very common in male prostitution where the prostitutes pretend that they're not gay, you know, they're selling sex to other men and that this might be, this role that they're taking on really might be a way that they're expressing their homosexuality that they, for whatever reason, are unable to come to terms with in any other way. So that really informed Jackie's character. You know, obviously, she's this woman from this wealthy family, and she can't really come out as a lesbian, but she can be someone who's paid, you know, to she can be a street hustler, you know, that's okay, because she's, quote-unquote, making money. But, you know, to actually come out to her family, like, that would be something different, so...
Yeah. Well, I love, first of all, that you mentioned, you know, Midnight Cowboy, because I feel like the movie really owes something to Midnight Cowboy in many, many overt ways.
We wanted it to be kind of like you would watch this movie and think of those other movies. And reimagining them, like, with women in these roles, and why is it so ridiculous?
Right. And I love, too, that the movie also has, you know, scenes of, like, real tenderness in it. It just, like, you know, it's not, I mean, it is raucously funny. I mean, I consider it to be, like, one of the funniest movies I've seen this year.
Thank you so much.
I'm curious, like, how do you feel, it's been making the festival rounds. How do you feel like the audiences, react to it?
Well, Lisa's gone to some different cities with it and can talk about different reactions in different cities. And but we, our first festival was this summer festival that Sundance had done the first time they were doing this festival in Los Angeles in the summer. That was our first experience, and it went so well that we got an Independent Spirit Award nomination.
Yeah, right.
Against all these other films that had been on the festival circuit for the entire year and been released theatrically. So first we were part of the semi-finalists, a group of 15 films, and then we made it into the final three, which was kind of amazing just on the basis of one festival. And so that was really exciting, and of course then going to Sundance, but we've had great screenings, in New York, of course, people go wild, and Lisa's going to talk about, Lisa went to Milwaukee, and the composer, Dan Bartfield, is from Milwaukee, and his whole family was there, and it was in this giant theater, and just, you want to talk about the reactions you've seen from around, and you went to New Orleans, and...
Yeah, I mean, people usually like bah-ha-ha. I mean, you know, they think the movie is uproariously funny. And it's sort of interesting to see the audience demographics in different places. Like in Dayton, Ohio, it was sold out in Dayton, Ohio, and there were mostly gay men there who loved it. In Milwaukee, the largest portion of the audience were lesbians who came to see it. You know, which I thought was really interesting. How, like, it sort of polarized. Like in Milwaukee, the lesbians came out for it, and in Dayton, Ohio, the gay men came out for it.
Lisa, you said this fabulous head of the lesbian.
The head of the Lesbian Alliance, one of the Lesbian Alliance and an organization called the Toolshed were co-sponsors of the movie, and the woman who is the head of the Lesbian Alliance, she announced to us that she was a transgendered lesbian, so she had previously male to female. So it was very exciting. So she was there, and she thought it was pretty funny. So
yeah,
I'm glad. She had many friends that came with her, actually. Yeah. So it was a different demographic than in other cities.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's Plus, that's cheese territory.
Yes.
And the
right.
movie is very cheesy. So.
And
beer.
Yes.
played well.
And beer territory. People probably had a couple of beers.
Oh, and also it went to the Moscow International Film Festival. And that was the
wow.
That's where it had its international premiere. And apparently the head of the festival had seen the movie at Sundance. And it was a very strange experience. I struggled with, I wanted to go so badly, I can't even tell you. But at the same time, I kept on top of all the news, and things were just getting worse and worse there.
Right.
And, like, the month before, the people, and I thought, well, it's Moscow. Like, how bad, you know, it's like, there's a gay bar there, and then in that month before, people physically ripped the gay bar apart. Like they.
Oh my God! Really? Oh man!
And the police knew everyone who it was. It was actually all the people who lived on that same block, and there were, of course, no arrests and everything. And then Putin outlawed swearing in movies. Like, and then also, and one of the things with the head of the gay bar went on Facebook to protest, you know, lack of support for arresting, you know, people who are committing acts of violence. And then also Putin's closing down Facebook. So, like, it was going to be the end of, like, you know, social media. Swearing in movies was starting, no more swearing, starting July 1 and or August 1, and we were in July, whatever. And I couldn't quite get, I mean, I was so thrilled that they would show the movie, but I couldn't quite get a straight answer from them. In terms of, I was like, look, I'm a lesbian.
Like how safe you would be. Yeah. Or,
yeah, like they couldn't really answer me directly. And I was like, look, could some big muscly guy walk me home from my screening? Like, and they were like, you're staying at a 5-star hotel. And I was like, I don't care what the thread count is of the sheets.
Right.
If someone follows me out of the theater, like, I'm going to be totally screwed. Like, and it's just, it's so horrible. It's just so horrible there. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, I think I would have skipped that.
Yeah.
I think if I were, yeah, definitely would
yeah,
have skipped
but,
that.
But I got a Facebook post from a member of the audience who was like, the audience cheered all the way through the movie, like, which was just amazing to me. So, you know, I mean, they're just, I feel like it's a level of homophobia we can't even begin to understand here, as horrible as it's been here, because it's like in Russia, they can really shut down all information.
Right. We don't even know how bad it is, really.
Exactly.
The movie, first of all, in regards to the making of the film, it's got an amazing use of New York City, you know, like not just New York, but Brooklyn and so forth, and Coney Island, and I understand there's a certain sort of dispensation that exists in New York for filmmakers. Can you talk about that a little bit, like who want to use locations and so forth?
Well, yes. My understanding is that, well, at one point it used to be as long as you didn't have a tripod, it's legal.
Okay.
Now what it is, basically, you have to make sure you have signs up, you know, around that says if you enter this area, you may be filmed, et cetera. That's your obligation to put those
right.
up. And then, so it's the thing about New York, and I'll never forget this with my last movie. We were shooting, it was Codependent Lesbian Space Alien, we were shooting a scene in a diner, and I had gone through all these, jumped through all these hoops to get permission from the diner, and it was an alien sitting at it in a booth talking, and we were shooting them, we had arranged with the manager, all this stuff. And all of a sudden, like in the edge on, in the back of this person, two booths over, and inside of our frame, is someone else shooting someone else at another booth.
Like, so, my God, really? That's insanity.
Yeah. So that movie, so much movie making goes on in New York that people know, like, it's almost like everyone is a trained crew member. Like someone starts walking down the street and they see a camera pointed and they just sort of change direction so that, you know, they don't look at the camera, like they stop. Can I interrupt?
Right.
And he's like,
they're incredibly smart about movie making and everything, huh?
Right, because they have to deal with it every day.
Right.
So that's all good.
That's interesting.
And
I never thought about that.
And another part of it is just for me in the movies, it's very important to include New York. Because we shoot with a small camera and we want to take advantage of that we're sort of like, you know, we're light on our feet and can get around and run around the city and really capture all these images and all this footage that, like, you know, when Goldie Hawn makes a movie or whatever, I don't know when her last movie was, but I'm sure one's coming out soon. And like she would, you know, it's like 10 million trucks and shutting down things. Like she can't do what we do.
That's the advantage of being having a small crew and also being a smaller production is that you can dance around the locations very quickly. I was I love, for instance, there's the scene in the movie theater in the Cinema Village, and you shoot outside of the Cinema Village. But inside, you had to recreate the inside of the, or did you go to another theater to shoot the inside?
Yeah,
we did.
We couldn't, we did, and they were very reasonable. They only charged us $50 to stand outside on the sidewalk.
Uh-huh.
And yet, all those people, like all those different wander into the frame. Like the Cinema Village is like so many people with like their plastic bags full of their lunch containers like to stand outside of the Cinema Village. But so we had arranged for that and we had an hour to get those shots, and then we did have to shoot a different interior. We never could have afforded the Cinema Village, we did have to get permission from the police gate to use their to include their sign in our movie, because in our movie, the idea is that the characters do go inside the theater. So that makes it legally, we have to get the permission. Does that make sense? So even though we literally weren't inside the Cinema Village, I don't know why anyone listening even cares about what I'm talking about.
Well, you know, I always...
But they love to be in movies, so they're very friendly to filmmakers.
Yeah. Can you talk about, Lisa, can you talk about, like, the dynamic between you and Jackie in the film and how you guys achieved the sort of, it's a very interesting relationship that you have in the film, because it's difficult to see whether it's going to turn romantic or not, you know, so... I think all of that stuff is fascinating, because you can, it's just a different kind of emotional note that you don't see in movies very often. So, can you talk about your method of working back and forth and so forth?
Well, sure. It's really fun to work with Jackie because she'll do anything.
She really will.
So she's kind of a loose cannon in a good way, in a really good way. And so like you never know what she's going to do, which is exciting, because then you can always have an honest response to whatever she does.
Right.
And so I mean that's one thing. And I mean, so I think that's something we tried to do, is just to be present and in the moment, and you know, really listen to each other. And then just in terms of for myself, you know, I was trying to remind myself that, you know, a lot of times my character doesn't really know what's going on and is trying to learn and figure stuff out. So playing it from a place of realism, I guess, in terms of acting grounding myself in realism, and that's sort of important to me, because it makes me feel like I can have like an honest response no matter how wacky, you know, anybody else is doing. And, you know, and Jackie has a lot of comedy experience, and she's a stand-up comic. And I have like a lot of, I used to be in an improv group and stuff, and so I think we're still very comfortable improvising with each other.
Yeah, I think you guys have a great chemistry, and I think it helps, like kind of like a repertory company, it helps that, we spent all this time together.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. We did spend a lot of time together and a lot of time writing.
Mm-hmm.
And Jackie, the thing about that is exciting about working with Jackie is she really will do anything. And when we were shooting Space Aliens and getting footage of her on the street, she would really go up to people and say and do anything. it was really, and one day there was another actor on the set and I tried to throw them in to doing the same thing and they kind of freaked out. And I realized, oh my God, oh, that's just Jackie who can do that. No one else can do as much, but she's totally fearless and she has tons and tons of stage performance, and she did many summers in Provincetown as a performer, and you get really good at street barking and, you know, yanking people into your show. So she has a kind of a, both Lisa and Jackie have so much performing experience that I felt like they could maintain their focus and concentration working under what would have been killing circumstances for other actors.
There's a really interesting element, too, that's in the film that really sort of sells the whole idea of lesbian prostitution actually being existing, which is the sort of documentary element that you put into it, the sort of faux documentary element, which those mm-hmm. actresses who were playing former, you know, lesbian sex workers or whatever, or you know, those it's hard to, they're so good at it that it's hard to tell if they're actors or not, you know. So it's like, wow, is this a real thing?
Yeah,
you know.
We like that. I mean, that was the purpose of that, to make people, to help sell it as a believable thing that existed. And those people were all performers who did those monologues. And I know one in particular, people were like, oh, that lesbian prostitute, that, where'd you get that real one?
Right. Because they all seem real to me. So, I mean, I think that's an amazing thing. Yeah. Sometimes I've seen that kind of faux documentary element thrown into certain movies, and it doesn't work at all. And in this one, it totally worked. And I thought, wow, this is really... It's really chancy to do that, you know.
It really is, and it was a very, when the movie was in cut, it was a very controversial section of the movie. This one filmmaker friend of mine came over here and had a total meltdown. He was like, you can't put that in the movie. You can't. Like, he went on for, like, hours about, like, include that in the movie.
Well, what was his why? What was the...
You know how people are with certain aesthetics and rules of a world, and you can't.
Yeah.
And but I just knew, that those interviews were so funny, and I thought, if I put these in a film and have a real audience watch them of people who love movies, not, you know, people with their list of aesthetic criteria. Like,
right.
I just knew that it was going to work, and I just knew it was going to be part of the movie and help the overall comedy of the movie work even more. So,
well, sometimes when that kind of element pops up in some other movies, the performers aren't as good as the ones in your film, so they don't sell it as good. You know, they don't make it. It still feels like it's written. You know,
right.
And it doesn't feel off the cuff like it does in Foxy Merkins. You know, so I think that's the major. That's the major reason why it actually works. Because sometimes if you introduce a sort of documentary element into a movie that's obviously mm-hmm. a narrative, sometimes it just derails it. But I could see where somebody would say, you know, it's probably not going to work. But if you look at the quality of the performances, I think, and it also depends on where you put it, you know.
Yeah. And
you know.
Just so you know, the performers, that first woman being interviewed is Lori Weeks, who many years was a performance artist and also is a very well-known novelist at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And Nancy Giles, who actually, she's a writer and performer, and she also does on television, like CBS News This Morning presentations about, she comments on race for the news. And I kind of couldn't believe that she would do this. It was great. She was in my very first short film that went to Sundance. But she's totally hilarious, too. And then Claudia Coogan, who's a stand-up comedian. So the thing, I think what makes them good and what makes the movie special, and I'm saying that even though I'm connected with the movie, I'm not talking about myself. I'm talking about the performers, is that there's something that performers who are constantly in front of live audiences bring to a movie. A lot of what happens, I think, with movies we see made in Los Angeles is that their actors, even if they started in theater, they're very far from their theater roots. They're not performing regularly. And they kind of lose their chops in a way.
Right, yeah.
And I am lucky to live in New York and have access to all these great performers who are kind enough to be in these movies that I make, and they're so funny, and it's because they're at the top of their game. They're constantly performing, and they're constantly in front of audience.
Yeah, and you have, I mean, the supporting cast, you know, on top of the people we've already talked about. Just the, do you call the tricks? Do you call them Janes instead of Johns?
Yeah, Janes sometimes.
Okay. Well, all the Janes in it are amazing too. So. It's just great, and also of course, what's the actor's name who plays the salesman of the Merkins?
He's
in a lot of stuff.
He is. He's on the show HBO's Girls, and he's in a lot of movies and stuff for sure.
And he's a maker as well.
And he's also a filmmaker, and he just it's really great. I met him on the festival circuit, and he'd seen my short films and really liked them, and so then agreed to be in. He was in Codependent, Lesbian, Space Alien, Seek Fame, and now he's in this film, and he's really great. We love him.
So let's talk about like where it's where the film is going now, because I know that what you have, IFC picked it up, right? I mean, how did you get that?
It's IFP, it's Independent Film Project. It's doing a theatrical run of it in New York.
Okay, IFP.
And then it's going to be released online through, like, all the major portals, starting with, like, iTunes and all that, towards the end of January.
Okay.
And it's continuing to go around the world.
When are the IFP screenings, just for our listeners that are in New York?
It's December 5th through the 11th. And
okay.
We're going to actually have, like, opening acts of performance artists and comedy and stuff like that in front of each screening.
Where is that going to be?
It's in their beautiful theater in Brooklyn. It's in Dumbo in Brooklyn. It's the first stop in Brooklyn on the F train.
Okay.
And so it's this theater call. It's all that info is all on our website, foxymerkins.com.
Okay.
So we will all be there, and we hope if your listeners come that they will come out with us afterwards for a drink or something.
I know from hanging out with Lisa that, you know, you're incredibly fun to hang out with, and really just a total bright ray of sunshine to me, and I'm sure it would be really fun to hang out with all y'all in New York. So.
Well, people find me sort of gloomy, but that's
maybe that's just would you? Well, you can't be that gloomy, not with a movie like this under your belt, and so.
Film is medicine.
So, do you have another idea that you're working on now that this one's hit where it's going?
Yeah, I'm still in the writing phase or something. So
right.
I have two ideas, and I hope to get going on them. It is, you know, when you have a movie going around, you're kind of like a hooker selling your wares. You're putting all your energy into that, but we look forward to our theatrical run. We're very excited. I mean, the theater is totally great. And it's in this the hippest part of Brooklyn with all these cool restaurants that have weird martinis and stuff like that. So, and people with beards and stuff. So,
yeah, Dumbo is a really great area of New York. It's really quite wonderful. So, I personally just think that anybody who is watching this movie, I can't emphasize it enough. It would be difficult not to fall in love with this movie. And for me, I would say if you didn't, I would say, what's wrong with you? Because it's completely wonderful movie, and everybody's great in it. And it's exactly what Infinite Film is for me, you know. And so, I mean, congratulations on a great movie, and
thank you
I hope
so much. That means so much to us, and it means so much to us. And we also make movies. You know, we like to. I don't even know what I'm going to say. I was going to say we find that like lots of times when we see gay movies, they don't really reflect how much humor and intelligence we can find in the gay community. So we try to really assemble a group of funny and smart people. So we hope through, you know, our runs and through our online that people will watch the movie because we made it to be seen. So,
yeah. And I mean, I think it's very friendly to, you know, I mean, I don't know how, you know, other straight audiences.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, I think it's very friendly to straight audiences too. Sometimes you see gay movies, and they don't really feel like they're going to play to a straight audience sometimes.
That's
but
true.
this one really does, and so well, at any rate, congratulations and thank you for spending time with us both.
Thank you, Dean. I feel like you just won a Foxy Merkins T-shirt.
I would love a Foxy Merkins T-shirt, absolutely. Okay, that was Madeline Olnick, director and co-writer of The Foxy Merkins, along with its star and co-writer, Lisa Haas. The Foxy Merkins will play at the Made in New York Media Center in Brooklyn from December 5th to the 11th. With its 4:30 performance on Saturday the 6th, featuring a Q&A with the cast, conducted by Mary Herron, the director of such legendary indie classics as American Psycho and I Shot Andy Warhol. For more information on the film and for notices on its home video release, which will probably happen at the beginning of 2015, you can like the film on Facebook or visit the website at www.foxymerkins.com. And this is Dean Treadway. Thank you so much for tuning in to Movie Geeks United, and keep watching movies. See you later.